N4IQ Mobile.
CJC.
For GDC, this is KO4HKX, Patrick. Sorry, Jerry, I missed your call up.
Hi, Patrick, how you doing? Yeah, I heard you checking in last night. Sure did sound good. Did you get your radio yesterday?
But I didn't get in until late, so I didn't get a chance to mess with it a whole lot. Still trying to get everything set up. When I checked into the net, you were breaking up there.
I'm not running much power right now. I'm probably not running enough power to keep the repeater in decent enough. But yeah, when you checked in last night, you sounded a little louder than usual. So I was just curious as to if you'd done anything different or not.
The FT-991A, the FT-991. That I got used. I got it hooked up at the house inside now, so it does a real good job getting out.
Sounded really good. Those are good radios. They cover everything to you. Just 160 to 440. That I got here. A couple of guys on here have them and really, really like them.
Found a good deal on an older version. It's not the A, it's just the 991. And the main difference I could find between them is it doesn't have the live scope. You got to hit the button if you want to do the scope on it. That's the big difference that I could find.
Those audio sounded really good on it, that's for sure.
And I'm glad to hear that it sounded good. I still got to get me a little better antenna. I just got a little trim. 1411 up there right now. So working on that. Got to get my HF antenna put up so I can do some listening and working on my general ticket.
An HF antenna picked out?
Bought a center bed dipole from MCOM just so I could get something up quick and easy because I hope to be moving here within the next year and a half. So I didn't want to spend a lot of time putting up an antenna just to have to take it down.
That's, especially if you're just going to have it set up for one or two bands, it's pretty easy to get them set up so they'll be resonant. And I hardly ever use dipoles any much at all. I use vertical just because I didn't usually have space. Yard space, I do now, but I'm just too dang lazy to go out there and try to set anything up on HF. I may try maybe later in the year, maybe. I'm not sure how I'll try to get that done. But that sounds good then. I'm glad you work on that general. I know you got that property too, so I imagine you're going to be doing a lot of work on that over the course of next period of time too.
Having something going with it and be in it in the next year and a half, like I said. But it all depends on the price of lumber right now and the way things are going. I just don't know.
Crazy right now. I had a deck on my house at one time and I took it off. It was the one that came on it when they built it. You know, just a little spec deal, and it wasn't built very solid. So I took it off and took the sliding doors out, put a window in the back of the house, and I'm thinking about building another deck now, maybe just building a low one where I could put my grill out there and we could sit outside and that sort of thing. Some didn't have a lot of steps, but building right with huge concrete piers and treated lumber, but good gracious alive, the lumber prices have just got astronomical.
That's why I was just kind of iffy about what's going to happen, so... Like I said, I just didn't want to put a lot of effort into putting up a tower or anything like that and then have to take it down. So I just went with something simple and easy, and I got the room to put it up, so, and the trees to hang it in.
They do fine. I mean, you know, people work lot of stuff with wire antennas, and the receive on them is pretty good as well, especially if you can get them up high enough, if you do it like an inverted V and that sort of thing. And Tom is real knowledgeable on wire antennas. He can probably give you some advice, too, as to how to set it up. But they work well. They're generally pretty quiet, too. That's the one thing of vertical versus vertical. My verticals were always pretty noisy, but I had run a bunch of radials, maybe 30 or 40 radials in the ground in order to get it to transmit. Otherwise, you got half of it going into the ground, other half of it coming out the antenna. But dipoles and wire-type antennas are great if you got the room. It's by far the simplest and most effective way. I mean, beams are always better, but not everybody can afford to put up a beam, and then you got to have a rotor and a tower and all that other stuff, and sometimes it's just not in the cars for everybody.
I don't have room for a rotor and a tower and all that where I'm at. Got to watch the power lines, so I'm going to have to put this wire antenna on the back of the house. And my concern there is I'm up against the back of the mountain there, so I don't know how well I'm going to get out to the south of me anyway.
Give you a chart online to tell you what the lobes are like when that dipole's radiating. And I know a friend of mine used them. He actually had his dipole set up on, I was set up on 80 or 40 meters. Could have even been 20, but it's mostly 80 and 40. But he had his running like from like a peak of his house on one end, and he had two different stakes. Poles he put them on the opposite end, and he'd move it maybe 40 or 50 or 60, or even move it across the entire lot and have it angle one way or the other, so he could get a better pattern going in one particular direction. Because they do have lobes on them, so, and inverted V works really well. From all I've heard over the years, and inverted V would work good, or get you a little telescoping mast and put it up, or just a sloper, that sort of thing.
Nice 6x6 wall behind the house that's about 100 feet long, so that's what I was going to do, is just get me a pole and stick it up there, and then run the ends down to the other end of the wall there. That way I got something to hook everything to.
And get you a piece of conduit or a telescoping mast or something, or whatever you want to use for the middle of it, get it up high enough. And also, I think that 991, doesn't it have an antenna tuner, internal antenna tuner, or am I thinking about another radio?
The tuner built into it.
Problems too then. Get a little bit of a mismatch. You know, those tuners, I think a lot of these internal tuners are not. Yeah, for long wires and stuff like that, they may not work so good, but just to get them to tune up a little bit on when you start moving around in the band a little bit, I think those things are really helpful. Anything you get close to 1.5 to 1 is good. Lower is always better, but sometimes for a lot of reasons, you just can't get it as low as below 1.5. It's just the nature of the beast, especially if you're using a single antenna for multiple bands.
Like I said, it's just going to be a learning process for me, so I'm going to try to figure it out as I go, just like everything else.
I always listen to a lot of different guys, but I found out over the long run that if I did it myself, if I figured it out on my own, even if I had a little help, it was always better, because then I know what not to do next time.
That I get that all the time. Sometimes it's just nice to listen to somebody and follow instructions.
It helps, but sometimes the instructions are not clear enough to be of any help at all. Sometimes they've confused me more than they've helped me. And I read them now before I start on anything, but sometimes I get ahead of myself and I skip a step or misread one. And that's one thing, as you get older, sometimes you'll miss something, you have to come back and read it a time or two. That's the one thing that's really good about these manuals for these radios. The menus are so complicated on them, and then they will have the manual online so you can look at it in the PDF and search for terms and that sort of thing. That's helped me out a lot as I've gotten older, instead of trying to look up a page number or something like that.
Well, I'm used to the menu stuff. A lot of what I used to do with automotive, we have a lot of menus that we had to jump through and learn all the acronyms for this, that, and the other. So I'm kind of used to that, just figuring out which one, what means what. And then, so, for that part of it, I'm okay.
I mean, that's makes it easy on me, especially if you got two or three different brands of radios to deal with, because they're all different. Yeah, it's different than Icon's different than Kentwood. Some of them you have to jump through hoops to do certain things, but other ones it seems simple until you start digging in the menus and find out what you got to do to change things. The radios I have SD cards or micro SDs in them, so I can save all the settings. So if I screw something else, all I got to do is just reload the settings. That's been a lifesaver, a time or two.
5100, it's got that feature. I can load everything on it in the house and bring it out and load it to it and make sure I have a backup on it, so that's nice. But I tell you what, programming some of these handhelds from the keypad, now that's a challenge.
Well, thank you, man. The Icons, yeah, of course, Icons didn't have anything. There's you. According to the guy, sales manager, national sales manager at HRA, 528 may come out, maybe June or July before we see it, if then. But the Icon's all pretty similar when it comes to D-Star. But I tell you what, the handhelds, though, at Kenwood 74, that thing is, that was one of the most difficult radios for me to learn how to program, because you have so many menus and so I got so many features on it, you just have to peel one apple at a time with that thing in order to get it right. The more features they have on them, the harder it is to take into the program. And, some of them have the memory setups are different on each one. And, I had a guy send me a file from my DCAP before a couple of years ago and to help me get some stuff programmed. And after I saw it on the file, then I knew how to do it. But, doing it from the front of the radio, even on the 74, you can do it, but it takes a lot of work to do it.
That's what I was talking about. Some of these little radios is just like, man, why? Where is this stuff hidden at? And then trying to figure out the correct procedure once you do find the option to do it.
You do this or this, and some of them have the up and down, side to side, keypad in the middle and everything. And, one thing about the Kenwood versus the Icon handhelds is you can save stuff into memory. And Icon, it's different than the Kenwood. You can save your repeaters and your digital repeaters in there. But some of the way you link it and unlink it is different from some of the other ones. It just takes some time to figure it out. And then the APRS stuff is even, once you get it, you got it. Now, it's pretty, any radio, once you know what is supposed to be set up, you can change one item on that APRS setup and you won't be transmitting anything. You'd be transmitting to the wrong path or something. So it's pretty complicated, but once you, in the beginning, especially if you're not accustomed to programming radios, but once you get it, you got it, and don't generally forget things, but there's so many variations on them that, you can click one little item on there, and the next thing you know, you can't transmit on that frequency, or it's going the wrong direction, you can't get it to offset, for a repeater, or tone, and it's just all kinds of stuff.
That 991, that's a pretty easy radio to program. I didn't get a manual with it, and I just sat there and walked through all of it. I had to watch one video on how to put a memory channel in, but other than that, I've just figured it out just by watching the keys and looking at them and going through it. It's pretty easy.
I'm not quite that easy. Of course, you got a 5100, so you know how that is, but the older single band Icon mobiles are even harder. I mean, they're more difficult to programmed to anything is I believe the Yaesu handhelds are not particularly easy to program. They've got an odd way to set them up in order to, some of them you got to take the battery off and you got to plug it in, put the battery back on and all this business in order to get them ready to program them through the computer. But now, the 300DR, I had the little mobile dual bander. Now, that was one of the easiest radios I've ever owned to program to set up. It was much easier than any of the other Yaesus I'd had before from years gone by. But then again, it's about the same. It's very similar to the 991. It's, the menus are quite similar to it. And it was a whole lot easier for a mobile. It wasn't a touchscreen. It was just a whole lot easier for me to set up than any of the others were. And it was really, really nice radio, too. That, had your continued VFOs, had separate buttons and that sort of thing, kind of like the 5100. And it was a good radio. If I needed another mobile, that's probably what I'd get myself. But I more like I'd wind up with a 5100 or something like that just because of the D-Star.
Pleased with this little 5100. I ain't got no complaints about it at all. I love the big screen on it so I can see it without having to, get my glasses out and focus on it and pay it, concentrate that hard on it to see it. So I do like that feature. I do wish it was something other than the LCD screen that put a regular screen in it, like the newer radios.
Well, I think the 5100 is probably the best one of the bunch as far as the D-Star. And it's also full of duplex, too, so you can use it on satellites. And it's pretty reasonable. It's still, it's not really, real, real expensive now, but I remember when they came out, you had to pay extra to get a bracket to mount it with. That was the only thing that I saw. So now they included in with it. But I would imagine, though, Patrick, that maybe next year or whenever this chip shortage thing kind of eases up, it wouldn't surprise me a bit if you see a color screen version of it, like the new handheld is going to be. Better contrast, good display for sunlight, that sort of thing. The 51 that I had the LCD screen, and it was hard for me to see that daggum thing in the sunshine. It really just didn't. It just wasn't bright enough for me at all.
That's probably the one complaint about this radio is the screen on it could be something other than LCD, but. I bought it new on sale. I think I paid $350 for it when I got it in November or September of last year. So I thought it was a pretty good deal. That was the best, looking around, the best I could find for a good, good name radio.
For $399 now. And that's the little... Well, the handheld screen just so small on that. It was just my eyes aren't that great anyway. I couldn't get the contrast enough. And this is similar screen that they use on their R30 receiver, which I had once too. It was great, but you couldn't you get that bright sunlight, you couldn't read the thing. It had an app to go along with it, so you could see your frequencies on your iPhone. But it just wasn't right. It didn't do any good for us for being able to read on the radio. I think they make, if they put color screens on those two, that'd be a good deal. But I'd like to see a 5100 with a color screen. I think that'd be a great radio. That screen display is huge, too.
It's as big as a smartphone now, so it's pretty good size. And, I got that Bluetooth app on my phone where I can hook it to the radio and I can transmit from there off the phone. I have never tried it, but it's there if I want to. And I've hooked it up, but I've never transmitted with it.
If you had a hotspot not too far away, you could transmit from it instead of a handheld. If you had it inside, or of course you got it in your truck, I guess. But anyway, I like them. This nice M100 is way too much right here for me. I got a better deal on mine than I thought I did. They were a lot more expensive, and I got mine. I just got a deal on it I paid more than I should have paid for any radio, but I still got it and I enjoyed it. But it's got a big screen. It'd be about the same size as a 5100. And I don't have any trouble at all. I can take it outside. I don't have any trouble at all reading it. That's not even, with brightness up to about 30% maybe.
KX for ID. Well, Jerry, I'm gonna have to say 73's here for a little bit. I gotta run in and take care of this shop. So you have a good afternoon, and I'll keep an ear out for you. KO4HKX, clear on your final.
Take care, Patrick. Have a good afternoon, young man. Talk to you later. N4DJC, clear.
Patrick, by Patrick. Hey, Jerry, KB4CBA.
Are you playing tennis yet?
Played this morning at 10:30, and then we're going to play in the morning again at 10:30. We kind of changed our schedule up this week, but because I'm going out of town. But anyway, do you know anybody that's that has a 7300 that's done a upgrade on, you know, on the software?
Well, it's just like it is on the, I got a 9700, just the same as it, I think. It's kind of tricky, I think. But I did it on mine, didn't really have much trouble with it after I figured out what to do. That's, I mean, yours got an SD card taken.
One of the instructions in the manual, I formatted the SD card, then I put it in the computer and downloaded the software, and I plugged it back into the radio, and I think you have to hit menu and go to the SD card and hit firmware or something like that. And when I did this, big warning thing came up, and it said, you know, if this messes up your radio, you have to send it back to China and all this stuff. So I don't know. That's probably just a, what they call it, a disclaimer. So they're not liable for it. It's going to be your mistake. And, so I was scared to do it, so I just backed out of it and popped the SD card out, and I haven't done anything else with it.
It did. This is the same way it scared me to death the first time I looked at it. I tried to do it two or three times until I realized that I was using the incorrect file. And when I found the correct file, I just hit the yes on it, and then when you do the final upload to it, you have to push down to hold the yes for just a second, then it'll start uploading the new firmware. But the other thing you have to take into consideration, David, is any files you created under the old firmware, you may have to save your files that you got, save them to the SD card, and then load them up into the 7300 software on the PC, and then take those files and save them as the whatever it is, whatever new firmware number it is. It should be a way to do that, because otherwise those files won't re-upload to the radio after you change the firmware. Because it's reading the settings from an old firmware package instead of a new one. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
That makes sense. Does that warning come up? Does that normally come up, or did I do something wrong?
Every single time you upgrade the software.
Well, it just you know, shook me up a little bit. Never seen that, and I decided I'm sitting in front of this radio, and I didn't want to screw it up. I wanted to talk on it, so.
Trouble I had was using the incorrect file name, downloading the wrong file name. And then, since I've got a MacBook Pro, it actually had the SD card was showing in two different locations. It's showing on the MacBook Pro, the Apple side of it is also showing on the, I use parallel from Windows, it's like a virtual machine on it, and it's showing on the Windows side as well, but so I was trying to upload it from the wrong one, and after I got that figured out, it didn't have any problems. Then all I did was open the file up and then just copy the new firmware, just move it over and then paste it onto the into the open folder, and that was it. And then I saved it and then put it back in the radio, and then uploaded it, and it worked fine that time. I was just having trouble with mine because of some other idiotic things that I'd done, but the warning thing scared me too. But I watched a couple of things online about them, and it's just everybody says the same thing. Be careful, watch out, don't do it, you know, warning, Will Robinson.
Well, I don't have any files saved, so I don't really have anything that I would lose. I guess the worst case scenario is I might have to go back to, you know, the default settings, and then but hopefully it'll work, because I know I did the download right, but I might go through it again just to be sure. But you can see it on, you can see the download on the SD card on the computer.
I tell you, the ones that I saw were really good was one guy, it was for the 9700, which it does the exact same way. It's identical the way you upgrade the firmware on it. But I would still, if I were you, I'd still save my settings and save them under the other file. That way you don't have to go back to square one to default on it. It wouldn't hurt to do that if you had an additional card maybe or something. I don't know what else advisable or not. But I didn't have anything saved in mine anyway, so I just let them go. It'll ask you, somewhere during the process, it'll ask you if you want to save those settings. And I just said no and just went on about it and redid everything, because I didn't have much, very few things set up in mine anyway.
I see what you're saying, because I have made some changes to some of the settings on it, and you know, that are supposed to do a little compression and some things like that, you know, supposed to make it sound a little better and get the optimum performance out of it. But anyway, okay. Well, I'm just, I've been up to Steve's house, KN4VWA, and he had a starter that I needed for my airplane engine, so I got that from him, and he was nice enough to give me a good price on it, so I'm headed back to the house. And this is KB4CPA.
Yeah, take another couple of looks at those YouTube videos. You look at it for the 7300 and for the 9700. Something was on 9700 a little bit better, because it was just a fairly new radio and people were having trouble figuring out what to do about the warning thing that you said. And also another one where it says, are you sure you want to upgrade or whatever it is? I can't remember the exact terminology. You don't just punch yes with that, you actually have to push the yes on the screen and hold it for just a second or two, and then it'll start uploading. That's the only other thing I could give you advice on, is don't, you know, if you just hit it, just punch it one time, it won't upload. So you have to push it and hold it down, but it's not the first one. I think it's the second time it says, are you sure you want to upgrade the firmware, whatever the terminology is.
No. Also good to know the car in front of me has no brake lights. Oh, Lordy. And I've changed lights on a car just like that one, and they are a pain to do.
Thank you.
old taillight assembly off. I mean, it's a big deal to change the bulb. And I said, that's everybody else. You can just open up the back of it and just put it in pretty easily. But that one required taking the whole assembly off to change a bulb. And for some reason, I think you need lead to burn bulbs out.
My dad had a Buick LeSabre, and you had to take that whole center panel out, and there were, about eight or ten millimeter nuts you had to take off, and then you had to pull that whole assembly out, and then you could replace, and I replaced all the bulbs, whether they were burned out or not, because I figured if one's burned out, the rest of them are right behind it.
They have a new too, mine, that taillight assembly had a seal on it, and if you didn't get it back on there right, you'd have water, you might have some moisture get in, so I just replaced all of it one time, and ended up digging side marking lights. I don't know how many of them I burned out over the 7 years I owned that thing, but it must have been something wrong with the electrical system, I guess, in order to do that, because I wouldn't, we drove it enough, but I very seldom have a, because I can't tell you when I'd had a taillight burned out of a car before, and that would burn, it must have burned out a half a dozen of the, over a 4 or 5 year period.
The smaller bulbs are the first ones to burn out. The 194s, and they're usually in like some of your running lights, and then your I think it's a 912 is the next one to burn out. It's just a little bigger than the 194, and it they usually use those in the third brake light on trucks and SUVs, and you see a lot of those burned out. And then if you have an LED, then I just feel sorry for you. That's all I got to say about that.
My Accord's got a combination of LEDs and regular conventional bulbs, halogen bulbs, I guess. But the driving lights, the driving lights are LEDs, but then the regular lights are, must be some type of conventional halogens, I guess. They don't look quite as white. Those things are expensive to replace, I imagine.
On the radio the other day, and he was complaining about, I think it was his brake light was LED, and he had some of the bulbs were burned out, and you can't replace the bulbs. You have to do the whole assembly. It was over $300. He wasn't real happy about it.
Now, mine didn't have any lights that go all the way across the back like some of them do. They're not that big, but I think it's got conventional. I think the backup lights are conventional, and the I don't know about the brake lights. They may not be LED. I'm not sure now. I know they put LEDs on them for a while, then they decided it wasn't such a good idea and are using something else now.
There was an ambulance going by, and I was trying to get over. I was in the left-hand lane, and I had to get over to the right-hand lane, so I was maneuvering traffic there. Let him get by.
Play those guys in fire trucks too. They'll run over you if you don't. I just noticed we got to head over there tomorrow to keep our grandkids. They're in a half day of school tomorrow, so we're going to keep them tomorrow afternoon over there in Malden, near Malden. And I never look forward to going through some of the Greenville traffic.
Hampton's, It's pretty bad most of the time. Now right now I'm kind of surprised it's not as crowded as I thought it would be. The only problem I ran into was back at where you can turn off of Wade Hampton to get on 290. They were merging the right-hand lane down to, you had to be in the center lane or the left-hand lane. And so that was bottleneck and everything and back there. But now, gosh, there's really not a whole lot of cars. I'm coming up on St. Mark's here. It's Mr. South, one of our favorite Mexican restaurants.
Over to that side of town for your office. I'm not real sure where you're talking about. I'll find it later when I can Google map it. But, you know, we're there near Woodruff, so that's before you get to Woodruff. There's not South Lawrence. It's kind of difficult getting in there when jail man's getting out of school and that sort of thing. We'll just be able to about lunchtime, and hopefully we'll head out before 6 o'clock. I don't know if we will or not, but at 5 or 6 o'clock traffic on Friday's heading into the, heading back towards towards Easland and Anderson, 85 is a mess.
If you know where the post office is in Taylor's, I'm coming up on it right now. And then right beyond that is a, yes, you top the hill. That's there's a traffic light there, and that's St. Mark's, and that's where Mr. Salsa is. Of course, I'm headed westbound, so I'm headed into Taylor's. But anyway, yeah, I hate all that traffic down around the Woodruff Road area, and I used to live in TR, and I had to drive to the Motor Mile every morning, and I would get up early enough to where I didn't have to fight the traffic. But coming home, I didn't have a choice because I got off at 5:30, so I was right in the middle of it, and I had to go Lawrence Road, and then you turn right onto, I guess it's Rutherford right there in front of Channel 4, and then it becomes, the name changes there at Shaw Street, because Rutherford turns right. So I guess it's Point Set Highway, yeah. And then I take it all the way up past Furman, and it took me 35 minutes to get home, and it took about 15-20 minutes to drive it going to work, because I left real early in the morning.
Get up that way when I was, used to go to Jones Camp State Park, do some trout fishing up in that area. I went up that way a lot, and that right around Channel 4. That, of course, my daughter works there, but getting in and out of that place sometimes is a real chore too. I went up that track going up Whitehorse a time or two. But it's about as long, it takes about as long for me to go up that way to Traverse Rest as it does the other way. The traffic on Whitehorse, of course, it's been quite a while since I've been up there. The traffic on Whitehorse is getting really bad before I quit going up there. But that could be a real pain as well. I just think go up the go by the Rutherford and that way to TR.
For CPA, well, I'll see where the ambulance was headed to. There's a wreck at Edwards Road in Wade Hampton. And so I'm going to stay in this lane because it's in the left lane. So I'm in the right lane. And I'll need to turn right on the Rutherford just past this intersection. So everybody's all right. There's a fire truck and an ambulance there. I can't see if law enforcement's gotten here yet or not. Probably so.
Keep your mind on your driving there, David. I don't want you to get mixed up in it. You don't need to be another customer of an ambulance or anything like that. I'll catch you a little bit later. Good to talk to you. Hope you have a great afternoon, too. Take care of yourself. N4DJC.
Well, enjoy this beautiful day. And always a pleasure, and we'll talk to you later in 4DJC KB4 CBA Mobile.